From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the change announced by the LDS Church last week about how their young missionaries can talk to the family back home, where before you could only call twice a year, now they can talk once a week. There are lots of things to work through here, not just how this might change the Mormon missionary experience, but what the change reveals about young people and how church leaders worry about them. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Julia Ritchie from KUER's State Politics Podcast, 45 Days. Every Friday, I get together with my fellow reporter, Nicole Nixon, to break down the latest news and bills from the Utah legislative session. If you live in Utah, this stuff will affect you. So subscribe on your favorite podcast app and sign up for our newsletter at 45days.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. If you are a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the announcement last week about the change in how missionaries communicate back home was kind of a big deal. Before, if you were one of the, I think, 65,000 strong Mormon missionary force, you could only get in touch with the family twice a year, Christmas and Mother's Day. But now, leaders say you can reach out all the time. Once a week, if you want, and you can decide how. You can video chat or text or just give a call. In her reporting on the story, the Salt Lake Tribune's Peggy Fletcher Stack spoke with Steve Evans of the Mormon website By Common Consent, who told her twice a year was too little, but once a week, that's too often. Evans worries that the monastic element of missionary service, you know, being withdrawn from the familiar, that could get lost in this change. But of course, this is the age of instant communication, and everyone understands it's going to be pretty hard to put the genie back in the bottle. And there are other questions here, like just what is the problem church leaders are trying to fix? Now, part of it, say observers, is that more missionaries are returning home early than ever before because of all kinds of different reasons, among them anxiety and depression related to being untethered from family and friends. Joining us first on the program is Lee Hale. He was KUER's religion reporter, now working on a podcast for the station that's going to explore how faith is practiced in everyday life. And Lee Hale, welcome back to you.
Hello, Doug.
Okay, so I guess I want to begin with what have you heard since the announcement was made just among the Mormon blogosphere? How are people reacting generally to all of this?
Well, missionaries aren't on social media quite like their parents are, so I've heard from a lot of parents. A lot of excitement, honestly. I know there are mixed feelings, but from watching the reactions of the siblings and parents of missionaries, it feels like, Peggy's article in the Tribune said Christmas came early, and it feels that way. Like, people are just excited to talk to this person who they miss, and even if their state's away, can feel like they're on the other side of the world because of this, the rules, the way they've been.
It's interesting. Peggy mentioned in her piece, one of her pieces, that it seemed like the reaction depended on the generation. So you had this kind of older generation that were like, you know, oh, this is going to they're being spoiled, these kids, and it's going to ruin now the quality of letters and stuff like that, which I think there might be something to that. But others are like, no, this is awesome. Sorry, we're in the age when we can communicate all the time. So it seems like that. Are you sensing that?
Well, it gets at this idea of like the monkness of, yep, of a mission, which is that, you know, is the purpose of a mission to go and discuss the restored gospel with people, or is it to try yourself? Is it to kind of go through the refiner's fire and become a different person? If you are of the feeling that it should be difficult, you should really challenge yourself, then almost these arbitrary challenges, like to communicate with family, that's really critical. It's really important that you limit the comforts of home and you keep a distance. And so for those people, I think, yeah, I think there's a little bit of like, well, you shouldn't do it. You shouldn't have that privilege because I didn't, right? Yeah. And this is a rite of passage. And other people just think like it's 2019 and, you know, these missionaries have smartphones now and they can contact their home in seconds. So let's stop pretending like we're back in the, you know, early 1900s. Yeah.
So let's go back to last week before this change happened. If you're a missionary, you go out. What are you told about the way you are supposed to contact family?
Well, missionaries have a little white handbook, sometimes referred to as the white Bible. Some of them keep it on their person, sometimes in their pocket. And it is a detailed list of everything, every rule as a missionary that you should adhere to. And let me just read one of these little statements here. This is from the White Handbook. As your call letter states, you are expected to devote all your time and attention to serving the Lord, leaving behind all other personal affairs. Do not become preoccupied with communication with family and friends. So this idea of devoting all of your time and attention, not being distracted, in a way, it's like, how do you make sense of that as an 18 and 19-year-old? How do you devote all of your attention? How do you not get distracted? How do you not focus on things that you just left behind? But that's kind of the standard. That's like the deeper rule here. And it's one of those things where it's like, if you tell a missionary, don't think about home, what are they going to do?
Yeah.
Think about home.
But the sense of deprivation, the monkness part of it, it seems like this is part of the Mormon missionary experience, or at least part of the expectation. Because it seems like it gets bigger than just the question of whether you can contact family. There are times, and I know it's part of the kind of ethos, the tradition of being a missionary, whereas times in the past, if you were a missionary, it was kind of frowned upon if someone close in your family died, that you were supposed to stay out there. That there was some kind of, I don't know if shame is the word, but in some cases it's worked that way. I mean, I've talked recently to people who've had these experiences where their brothers, their sisters, their fathers, you know, who passed away or had really difficult times, and they were just expected, even though they were allowed technically by the rules, the expectation was, no, suck it up. You need to stay out there. So it seems like that idea of deprivation is part of the kind of, whether it's a technical part, it seems like it's part of the kind of cultural experience.
Well, in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, everyone has responsibilities. They all do the work. But as a missionary, you do it full time. And that is like the one part of your life where you are expected that every waking hour is doing the Lord's work. And so when you put those stakes on it, right, what could be more important than God's work? What could be more important than bringing souls to Christ? I mean, there's this kind of quirky little decal thing you might see in Utah stores, which is that missionaries leave their family for 2 years so other people can spend eternity with their family. You know, that you're preaching this gospel that people can be together forever. And so I think that's kind of the guilt that's put on them is, yeah, sure, you might be giving up your comfort, your family, this love, but look what you're doing for other people. Even if something tragic happens, what could be more important than that? And so that you're right, that does weigh on people, though. I think the being kept from going to a funeral, those are the rare experiences, but the more common experiences of people who just yearn to have a little bit more connection to home, and I feel like that's basically a sin.
Let's take a few phone calls. Let's start with Paul, who's in Alpine, Utah. Paul, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Sure. Go ahead.
So I served a mission. Actually, I served here in Salt Lake City, Utah from 2007 to 2009. I really don't feel that creating this situation where individuals, both brothers and sisters, can call home once a week is actually going to provide strength to both the church as a whole or even the missionaries as individuals, because we're essentially giving, I guess, a more holistic example would be drugs to drug users, really. At this point in time, a lot of individuals are dependent upon that constant connection, as we see through social media, and constant need for affirmation and to be told that everything's going to be okay and everything's going to be fine. And if we start putting our missionaries in situations where they're constantly going to be talking to their family, not because we need isolation or deprivation is what's been discussed, but because individuals do need to be able to rely on themselves and rely on Heavenly Father, which is what they're going to be out there to do, that if we don't put them in a situation that, yes, it may be uncomfortable, they're never going to be able to learn those attributes. And moreover, we were already contacting our families once a week. That's hardly deprivation. I mean, that is, you're contacting your family once a week, you get an email or a whatever once a week. And at that point, can we really say that, you know, we're in situations that are, you know, we're leaving our families? I mean, it's still communication in the modern day. And so it's a double-edged sword, but at the end of the day, I think Gordon B. Hinckley said it best, which is, you know, forget yourself and go to work. If you're constantly talking to your family, you're not forgetting yourself. You're not forgetting your family.
Yeah. Lee, I'm hearing that quote from Gordon B. Hinckley a lot over the past couple of days.
That's a classic quote. Because when President Hinckley, who served as prophet in the 90s and is kind of looms large as one of the I think the most well-known leaders of the church. When he was a young missionary, I believe in England, he wrote home and was basically saying he was wondering if he was wasting his time. And his dad said, Gordon, forget yourself and go to work. And that is kind of the mantra.
Which is the suck it up.
Suck it up. And it's interesting. I mean, to use that example of giving drugs to drug users, in some ways you have to give drugs to drug users because they're drug users. I mean, if we're talking about illegal drugs, that's one thing. You don't want to take a prescription away from somebody who – and it's like you do wonder like this communication with family. Yes, I think you can see that the younger generations might be going overboard with social media. But in other ways, it's like, you know, what is it about communication with family that is so destructive? I think that's the question a lot of people have asked themselves.
Yeah. I don't feel like I won't speak for Paul in any way, but it seems like there's this strain of sentiment that this is just a bunch of spoiled and coddled millennials who need to be constantly.
Which I'm a millennial and I do fit that description for one.
Right. But that seems like that's a strain of like, come on, you people, can't you just be out there and not be connected?
Which that's actually attractive, I think, to parent and missionaries, you know, in a lot of ways, is that, you know, you really do. A mission's going to be hard. I don't care how often you're calling your family. It's going to be hard. It's a crazy thing that these young people are asked to do. The question is, should it be made harder with rules like this, or is it hard enough just by the way it is?
Well, let's see what a mom has to say. Jenny Noonan Dye is joining us here in the studio. She's a podcaster, a blogger, writes on her own blog, formerly Fred.
Correct.
That's spelled with a PH, by the way.
And an A.
And an A, that's right. And she's with the Mormon News Report podcast. She's also a missionary mom. And you talked to your daughter, Ray, this morning.
Yes, and thank you for having me here today.
My pleasure. What was it? How was it?
It was incredible.
Yeah.
It was great. She phoned me early this morning. She's in Canada, and she happens to be in the same time zone that we are, so it makes it more convenient.
Okay, so I want to get you to react to what we were discussing before, that
sure.
In part, this is, look, Ray's going to be fine. She doesn't need to be in contact with you all the time. She doesn't make it, it's fine. She can talk to you on Mother's Day. She can talk to you on Christmas. Why do you need to be in contact with her all the time? How are you reacting to what you're hearing? I'm guessing that strain you're hearing a lot of too.
Sure. Well, I think about it from a few different perspectives. The first is from hers. And I asked her directly, that's the best way to find out. And I said, what do you think about this change? And it was interesting to hear what she said. Her response was that there are things that have happened, things that she's wanted to share with me that have happened throughout her mission. She's been gone a little over 7 months, that she just hasn't told me because it's too much to type out. She also indicated that this would lessen her stress on her preparation day. So I think about it from her perspective. I also think about it from my own perspective, which is a little different than maybe a typical missionary mom that you might talk with. I've had a very, very difficult time with her being away. Not so much in a selfish sense as in I want to talk with her, but I find it very difficult to deal with the idea that if she needed me, that there would be rules in place within this structure where the instruction is to not reach out to me.
Yeah.
Before she left, I was very direct with her, actually, and to be frank, where I just said,
I don't care about the rules.
Yeah.
If you are sick or need something, reach out to mom.
Mainly if you're in danger.
Yes.
There's no rule that is more important than your safety. Get help if you need it. Because I see that a lot. I think we see that a lot with missionaries who come home and kind of think, what was I? That was not safe. I should not have done that or something to that effect.
Yeah.
That's been very difficult for me to deal with. I've since this announcement last Friday, I've rested better than I have in months because of that.
So you think that an obstacle that might have been there and a kind of weird cultural expectation has been set aside now, and you have, and it's going to clear things up, in at least that way,
potentially.
Yeah,
sure. And it is, and I fully recognize this is different for everyone. The other thing that I see this bringing is both in not necessarily negative, but more of a regrettable realization and recognition for those who have served missions before, where they say something along the lines of, man, if I I was struggling on my mission. And I think if I, and I include in this group people, as you mentioned before, the large group of missionaries who in the past handful of years have returned early because of issues such as anxiety, that I wonder for how many of them, their situation is that they would say, if I could have spoken with my family once a week, if I could have touched base just a little bit, then I think I would, that would have been enough for me to keep going. But I also think that for people who did struggle on their mission, this will open a dialogue where they don't feel so compelled to stick to the idea that this was, in actuality, the best 2 years, but rather that it was, that there were struggles.
Yeah. It's back to the phones. Mike is with us in Syracuse. Mike, hi.
Hello. I have a daughter who just returned back in about 2 weeks ago, so lucky me. I was able to enjoy the news from afar. But, you know, it's very interesting because when she left, I had some of the same emotions personally that I had when a relative had passed away just a couple of years before. And that distance was very concerning. Now, again, I'm talking for me. And I think that it would have been helpful to be able to have some conversation that I think over time would have diminished as she continued to focus on the work that she was involved in and did very well. Also, just another thought, she had a health issue that happened, and we found out about it over an email later in the week, the next week, when she was actually able to respond. Now, could we have done much to affect it? No, but just to be able to talk to her and make sure everything was okay would have helped us make sure she was well. Maybe if she needed some support, we would have been there to offer her assistance. So I think there's some good in this. A friend of mine and I were talking about the fact that maybe once every week is a bit much, but overall I think that it's going to have benefits.
So you think this sort of strips down that barrier that we were talking with Jenny Dye about, that there won't be a barrier in there, and then they may be able to just settle in and get to work once they resolve
right.
all
oh,
that.
Yeah. Exactly. Something that, you know, you send a kid to college, you can call them up, you make sure they're okay. And then after a while, they really don't want to talk to you much more, I suspect. And that's just living at my house, right? So there's this feeling that they're going to be back to work. They're going to work hard. They're going to do what they're intended to do. But there are those times when a reach out is needed and difficult. And I think sometimes we take it for granted that vocal communication is much easier, or even a quick text just to say that you're thinking about somebody, and you're restricted from doing that. Now, I served in a South American country, and I think that there was a point in time where cost was an effect, and a difficulty of communication didn't make it as easy. But now here's my daughter. She's receiving emails. She was receiving emails. She would receive Facebook posts. She couldn't respond, but she was receiving them just like she was. A letter might come into the mail every day. So she was getting those messages and just not able to respond back. And it does seem a little bit antiquated, although I can appreciate that if it was overwhelming to an individual, and this is where they need to be adult about it, even of how much is too much and how much is just necessary.
Yeah. Mike, glad you called. Thanks very much.
It makes me think of something I've been hearing is that with these two phone calls yearly with missionaries, those are such intense moments. They tell you to limit to like 45 minutes. I don't think any missionary in the history of the world has ever limited to 45 minutes. Maybe they have. Missionaries like to be obedient.
Yeah.
But it is like, what can you possibly say in an hour when you don't get to talk to this person basically ever? So I think some people that have served missions look back and think, if every week was like that, I wouldn't want it because that was too much.
Yeah.
But the question is, will every week feel like that? I mean, the idea, and this is kind of the experiment that's playing out right now, will this demystify home a little bit? Will this normalize it in a way where those phone calls won't be such wretching, you know, emotional experiences? You know, I think that's the question. Or maybe they will be just as painful. Just you have to do it every single week, you know?
Yeah. Jenny, what do you think?
Well, again, allowing for the fact that this is very individualized, I have a lot of thoughts about this. One is that, yes, we had the Christmas phone call, and the second we connected, the stopwatch had begun, and there was a lot of pressure. And like Lee said, like, what can you do when there's so much to say? I do think that parents the adjustment period for this will be huge.
Yeah.
And I really feel strongly that parents have a huge responsibility to not only take the missionary's lead, but also be encouraging I think the connection is important. I mean, we're talking about a generation of kids who have grown up as digital. Natively, they speak digitally. They have grown up with access to friends and family, excuse me, in their pockets. And so that abrupt disconnection is a reality. It's a huge adjustment. And we can go back and forth about whether kids are spoiled or coddled. But let's remember who has spoiled and coddled them, maybe. but that's what I mean. We do have to take responsibility as parents also to say, you know, my perspective is such that I don't want to spend all day on the phone with my kid. I want to make sure she's okay, see if she needs anything, see if there's anything she'd like to share with me, and keep that connection going. But if it were up to me, I don't want her to think that her family is a distraction. That is something from the past that has equaled obedience, and I've seen it as missionaries have kind of re-entered the world as they've come home, that they almost think that their missionary self is superior to their family self. Mm. And that ongoing connection, there can be a lot of discord there.
Wow. And it's really obnoxious.
Quite, for sure. For sure. So I think that the newness will wear off. And I think parents and families need to understand that, you know, there doesn't have to be a phone call. It can't every week. It can be texts or, you know, however, whatever other methods. We can go back to email.
Here's a comment from Kendra who sent this via Facebook. She says, I think it's wonderful. Rarely is isolation from loved ones a healthy thing. I've seen missionaries have trouble adjusting to civilian life after the mission. I think this new policy will help many not experience such a shock in both the entrance and exit from the mission field. Mila writes this, I would be loath to part with the weekly emails that I received while my son served for 2 years in Ghana. Not only were they uplifting and tender and at times humorous, they provided a wonderful record of the people and the events and the personal growth that he experienced. This is one of the things you hear about from time to time, I think, Lee, is that is one part that may
quality.
Go missing. Yeah, the quality.
Quality over quantity.
I'm hearing a lot of that, it seems like.
I had a friend who served in South America, and he said, he struggles on the phone with his mom these days as a 30-year-old, but he said that the mission forced him to really articulate his thoughts kind of paragraph by paragraph in these emails in a way that he wouldn't have. I mean, we probably all know people like this who, when they're young, they have a hard time saying what they're feeling and saying what they're thinking. And so for him, it was a kind of a challenge in a way to think, how can I make a meaningful message home every week? And he thought that they actually had more value than a phone call would have had. So you're right, Jenny. You have the option. I guess the worry is, like, you know, will people just take the easier option? Because the harder thing is sitting down and really writing out what's going through your head, what's going through your mind, kind of creating this kind of a journal shared between family and missionary.
Yeah, I've thought about that journal kind of critique as well, that the worry that, well, you know, we'll have phone calls, and so there won't be a written record or something. I do think that we also need to acknowledge that kids are sending photos way more often than they were before, because you can do that digitally, and that's of note.
1,000 words per photograph, right?
that's what my daughter said. That was her math, too. So, well done. Yes.
Lee Hale is with us from KUER's. He used to be the religion reporter, now working on a podcast, by the way, about faith.
TBD.
We'll tell you more about that sometime later. Jenny Noonan-Dai is with us, a podcaster, blogger, mom. Ray is in Edmonton.
Correct.
And she just talked to her this morning. Mm-hmm. We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER.
Support for KUER comes from local and national businesses across Utah. As a corporate underwriter, your business can support the news, information, and conversations you hear every day on KUER. And our loyal, active listeners will hear about your company and the work it's doing in our community. To learn more about becoming an underwriter, go to KUER.org and click Business Support.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the change announced by the LDS Church last week about how their missionaries can talk to the family back home. Before, you could only call twice a year. Now you can talk once a week. You can text, you can video chat if you want. We're working through a number of these questions here, not just how this may change the Mormon missionary experience, but what the change reveals about young people and how church leaders might be worried about them. Lee Hale from KUER is with us. We also have Jenny Noonan Dye here, a podcaster, blogger. She's a missionary mom. Let me introduce two more guests. Patrick Mason is joining us. He's an historian and the Howard W. Hunter Chair of Mormon Studies at Claremont Graduate University in California. His latest book is called What is Mormonism? A Student's Introduction. He's joining us from the studio at Claremont. And Patrick Mason, welcome back to you.
Thanks, Doug. Good morning.
And Amy Heffernan is with us, a therapist based in Seattle, Washington, and a board member at large for the Mormon Mental Health Association, joining us from the studios of NPR station KUOW in Seattle. And Amy Heffernan, welcome to you.
Thank you, everyone. I'm happy to be here.
Patrick Mason, let me just begin with this question. What do we know about the problem church leaders are trying to address here? And let me maybe even make it more specific. Why are so many young Mormon missionaries returning home from their missions? Because that seems like that's part of it.
Well, I think this is part and parcel to some of the generational changes that we've seen and we've talked about in the first half of the program, but also the fact that the missionaries are younger than they used to be, especially the men. A lot of them are coming out straight out of high school. They've never had an experience away from home. And so this is really difficult for a lot of them to adjust to mission life, which is very rigorous, very strenuous. And so it's difficult for them. I've talked to mission presidents here in the United States who say that the number one issue that they face as mission presidents are mental health issues of their missionaries.
And what do we mean by that? Is it because this generation is somehow afflicted with mental health issues in a way, or that people are more transparent about it? What is it about the circumstance, if we understand it? I'm not sure you can quantify this for us, but what is the sense of why young people are more anxious, more depressed in some cases?
I don't know. I've got the wrong kind of PhD to say that.
We have someone who has the right one, but we'll get to that.
Right. Yeah. Well, I do think that we're seeing it. This is not just a Mormon missionary problem. Yeah. We're seeing this on every college campus in America, where every campus that I know of has increased resources for mental health. And so the rates of anxiety, the rates of depression that we're seeing among college freshmen and all college students has skyrocketed. We certainly see it on my campus. And so this is not unique to Mormon missionaries. Now, of course, the Mormon mission is a real pressure cooker, and the inability to have outlets with friends and family networks back home, I think, has just exacerbated that. So hopefully this acts as a kind of safety valve to release some of that pressure.
Amy Heffernan, what do you think about this question of why, your sense of why it is so many seem to be returning earlier? This seems different.
Yeah, I've noticed that too with just a local community level. There's ideas about why kids are having more anxiety. Some of the ideas are, you know, helicopter parenting, that kids aren't able to face things that are hard. I think growing up, at least in the 80s, we were off from home for hours at a time, and we had to figure out if our bikes broke or if somebody broke their arm, and we had to be resilient that way. And I think a lot of kids don't have as much of that shaping of character, and there's a lot of different ideas from this, you know, perspective of therapists, but I think that's one factor. I think, as Patrick mentioned, kids coming straight out of high school, they haven't had that experience of struggle with getting roommates and cooking food and doing laundry and having kind of challenges that they have to figure out for themselves.
How much of this do we know? And maybe, Amy Heffernan, this isn't quite your area of expertise as it might be Patrick Mason, so let me put this question to Patrick Mason. Do we have a sense of how much leaders are worried about young people, not just the mental health question here, but the questions they may have about the truth claims of Mormonism, whether Mormonism is in fact true, and that they have these questions that they're confronted online on in a way that other generations may not have been, going out not entirely convinced that this is, first of all, something they want to do or something they necessarily even believe in. Can you speak to that question?
Yeah, we do know that, and we know that church leaders have spent a lot of time studying that issue, studying what has variously been called faith crisis, or just even if it's not at the point of crisis, just what do you do with a generation that has so much access to information online and elsewhere? And so we've heard this in General Conference addresses, we've heard this in various trainings and local meetings that they have. They're very, very concerned about what people in their teens, 20s, 30s, this transition for millennials, now for Generation Z, are they going to stick with the church and is it going to look the same? So in some ways, we've seen some defensiveness on the part of church leaders. They've had to play defense, but they're also on the offense as well in terms of trying to address this and keep people in the fold.
Lee, are you hearing this as part of the conversation, at least yet?
This is a pretty sophisticated way to look at it. I mean, the reality is that, I mean, you're right. There is this element of faith crisis. I think that when I see most people confronting that primarily post-mission. Mm-hmm. I mean, the reality is these missionaries haven't thought a ton about the church, a lot of them, before their mission. Like, they kind of learn to be Mormon in a way on their mission.
Because there's an expectation that they're just going to go. You can figure it out later.
Well, because when you're 15, 16, 17, you're worried about other things too, yep. Right? I mean, I guess I can't speak for every missionary, but I think that when I talk to people in faith crisis in the Mormon world, often it's, you know, people reference things like, I wasn't told this on my mission. You know, I felt lied to or misled, and I was teaching these things I didn't quite understand. And so I wonder about that too. I wonder if younger people are clued in more. I know certainly people coming home are. It's been mentioned more than once that the return to home is just as important as leaving. And I think that this is really important for that. I mean, if you can learn, for instance, if you can have like a nuanced conversation with your parent about doubts you're having on your mission in real time, perhaps that'll be healthier than just bottling them up and coming home and just kind of doing your own research. I'm not sure, but the idea is, you know, I think that missionaries kind of coming back into real life, you know, quotation marks, I think that's often where some of these things are dusted up.
And let me just insert, I think that's right, Lee. And I think church leaders are really concerned about people having quality mission experiences, right? Because they know from their research that a mission is one of the best predictors for a lifelong activity in the church. But if you had a difficult mission experience, then that foundation that you have is a lot shakier than it could be otherwise.
Amy Heffernan, I don't know, do you, I'm not sure if you counsel people who might have this kind of sense of cognitive dissonance about their relationship with Mormonism and whether they're committed to it, is it unhealthy to be out serving a church that you're not entirely convinced is quote unquote true?
I see lots of people in this transition, and it's something that I feel really passionate about. I think one of the things I've noticed is that people hold on to their mission experience pretty significantly through their life, for positive and negative. So if they come home early, they hold a lot of shame about that. Oftentimes they feel like they failed something that they or maybe their parents had really been working their whole lives towards. Mm. So as we're seeing rates of depression and anxiety go up on a general level of the nation, and then as we see, of course, that trickles into the missionaries, we have to think about how to get them to be in a healthier place. I think we all can agree we want healthy missionaries. And so it was funny. It wasn't lost on my family when I told them that I was going to be doing this interview, because I went on a mission and I would often call home illegally. None of my mission presidents are listening to this right now. And so they were laughing at me, because then I'm like, you're the one that's going to be talking about this, Amy, because I did feel like I needed a little lifting up from home sometimes, right? And at the time, I could sense with my own authority that it was important for me to check in. It was important for me to be buoyed up a little bit by my family, right?
Yeah.
But I did feel, I did feel guilt. It was pretty much the only rule that I broke on my mission, to be honest. I was a pretty good missionary. And if I could go back and tell her, my former missionary self that someday Doug Fabrizio would be interviewing me about me illegally calling home, she would probably be a little more relaxed. So I think it's a great thing, to be honest. At my first knee-jerk reaction was kind of, you know, what you guys had discussed earlier, in the sense of, will they lose that experience of digging deep? Right? Missions are hard and awkward. It's the hardest thing I've ever done. Really, it's culture, food, awkward mission companions, all the mission rules. You're away from your family. And I really had to rely and dig deep. And I just wonder, does that access to family communication hinder that digging deep experience? And I don't think we can quite tell. I hope not. I hope that it just, you know, that missionaries still learn to do that growth that we want them to do. You know, I think, as Jenny mentioned, I think Jenny wants her daughter to have a really great mission experience, but she also doesn't want her kid to suffer, yeah, right, on her mission with any mental health or physical health, whatever it might be. And so if this change can help missionaries have an overall sense of wellness, I'm all for it.
Here's something that came from Twitter. I don't have a name here, but I'll just read it. I had a companion, this person writes, who was a convert in his mid-20s and who called his non-member mom once a week. Damn the rules. I had a companion whose dad died, and he stayed. It was a hard choice for him, but it was his choice. Now, which gets us to this, again, this, and I want to hear, Jenny, I want to hear you on this, and Amy, I want to hear you on this as well, all of you for that matter, but to this idea, this ethic of sacrifice, that it is a worthy sacrifice for you to be out in the field, isolated from these home relationships. How healthy is that idea, Amy Heffernan?
I don't think it's healthy to be isolated in that deprivation, that monkness that you guys had referred to. I think it's going to be really individual for each missionary. And I think it's going to be very important for parents to know their children well. I don't think the deprivation is the most healthy thing. It wasn't healthy for me. It was important for me to stay connected, to feel like I had a lifeline there if I needed it. And I was thankful that my parents didn't get mad at me about it, that they didn't make me feel bad for calling home, yeah, when I really, really needed it. And so I really think that this change overall, I'm going to say, on the net positive for missionaries. And hopefully with each individual experience, they're going to be able to navigate what's going to work for the family.
What do you think?
I think they sacrifice enough as it is. They sacrifice, you know, potential scholarships. They fall a couple of years behind in college. They sacrifice jobs, money, cars, social life. And I think that viewing, again, that idea that family is a distraction is so inconsistent with what we learn and believe and teach about the very eternal nature of families, that I don't think there should be any shame for a desire to touch back and keep in contact, keep those family relations strong.
Patrick Mason, this is one of the ironies that I think you've pointed out, that this is a family-centered church. So talking about your family as a distraction seems weirdly ironic, I guess.
Yeah, it was always a strange thing to send people out for 2 years or 18 months to teach people about eternal families. I mean, this is one of the core doctrines of the LDS Church. And then to say, but don't talk to your family at all. I mean, and that if you do, you should feel shame or guilt, as we've heard. So I think this reconciles that position and makes the policy line up with the doctrine that the church has had and embraced for a long time.
Is this a concession by leaders that was a problem? Is this something that they're trying to fix, or does that just happen to be one of the indirect impacts of this, is that it will? I mean, are leaders actually, do they have the kind of self-awareness that this is actually something they needed to fix in that way, if you know what I mean? Hard to say.
Nobody asked me, but until you. But I think certainly. I mean, they are self-aware. They're very self-aware, and they're always competing goods. You know, that there is something to the monastic life and to sacrifice. That, you know, with any good and healthy and complex life, there's going to be competing goods. But I think on this one, they simply came to realize that there didn't need to be a competition of goods in this particular case.
Here's something from Myrna, who writes, I read some comments on LDS-centered sites about how the change would help address the need for many missionaries who suffer from anxiety and depression. Do we want anxious and depressed missionaries in the field? Amy Heffernan, what about that question? If you don't have the, if you have anxiety and depression, maybe you shouldn't be out there at all. What do you make of that?
I think the stigma around mental health is the biggest problem with all of this. Yeah. I've been seeing so many comments, and it just kind of hurts my little therapist heart that I see people thinking that because if you're struggling with depression or anxiety, that you're not capable as a missionary. I think, no, people can completely be capable of doing life as you struggle with these things, which you're going to through your life, ups and downs, and you're going to have the joy and the sorrow of life, and it's going to have that. And so to me, it's not a problem for missionaries that are struggling with this to be on their missions. What I think is healthy is that we give them good tools and good coping mechanisms that they can be the best possible missionaries that they can be. If that means calling home or video chatting or whatever it is, I'm saying, let's do it. Let's get these missionaries to live the best life that they can as their missionaries. Most of them want to stay. Right? Most of them do really genuinely want to stay on their missions. They don't want to have to be, come home. And if they do end up having to come home, I would hope that they can make that decision independently on their own to say, yeah, this isn't a good fit for me. Right? Yeah. And I don't want that to just, you know, as it's been referenced earlier, to not to have to come home just because of no contact rule. Right? That would make me sad for them, for their life story and the narrative that they have about wanting to serve their mission.
I would add, Doug, that it's no coincidence that this is President Nelson's decision. Mm-hmm. I mean, since President Nelson has been prophet for over a year, he's made a lot of tweaks, cultural tweaks, sometimes, you know, systemic tweaks. This reminds me a little bit when three-hour church became two-hour church. Mm-hmm. And the same thing came up a little bit, which was like, are we making Mormonism easier for people? And is that the point? And I'm reminded of a quote from Joseph Smith. This kind of gets at the heart, I think, of like that word sacrifice, where he at one point said, a religion that does not require sacrifice of all things never has put power sufficient to produce the faith necessary unto life and salvation. So that sacrifice from a religion is what saves you, basically. That's kind of a Mormonism tenet. And so I think that's a fair question. You know, when it comes to sacrifice and communication with home, then the question is that the sacrifice Joseph Smith is referring to, right? We think about military, people in service in the military. And I've seen this on Facebook, people making a comment like, well, when I was deployed overseas, I could still call my family more frequently than missionaries do. Do you question the dedication of somebody serving in the army because they can talk to their mom? Or is it a different kind of dedication? So I think the idea of sacrifice will always be really important. And I think the question is, will this cheapen that or can they live together?
What does this reflect, Patrick Mason, to the question of what this reflects about President Russell Nelson's leadership? Making a lot of, as Lee mentioned, a lot of what seem to be kind of important cultural changes within Mormonism. Is he seeing a bigger picture here?
I think so. And this is where I and many other observers have to eat crow. I mean, I had predicted that we were going to see a conservative status quo presidency, and I was dead wrong. And because I conflated conservatism on certain ideological and doctrinal issues with the kind of conservatism in leadership and management, and that certainly has not been the case. He's been very activist. And I think we see not just President Nelson, but an entire group of senior leadership who see real need in the church to adjust, to continue to respond to the culture and to the needs, and to make this a 21st century church. Any organization, any religion has to be living and breathing and adapting in order to survive and thrive. And I think they recognize that.
Jenny, yeah.
I hadn't actually considered this until Lee said it, but talking about the change from 3-hour to 2-hour church, the idea is to have a more family-centered gospel learning structure, whereas before it was we would come home from church and say, what did you talk about at church today? Whereas now it's we go to church and say, what did you study as a family the past week or two? And I feel like this is actually in line with that, as with that change, the 2-hour change, because if it's another step in connection between individual family members, then that is actually more in line with maybe some overall overarching goal that the first presidency might have.
Let me take another few phone calls here. Start with Matt in Ogden. Matt, sorry for the wait. Welcome.
That's okay. Thanks, Doug, for having me.
Sure.
My thoughts are I served a mission. I was halfway through my mission when they did the age change. And I think the panel has brought up some really great thoughts, and I just wanted to add a different perspective that not only will this change, I feel like, benefit the missionaries themselves, but I also think it'll benefit the mission organization in the individual fields. When I served and they made the age change from 21-year-old sisters to 19-year-old sisters and 19-year-old elders to 18-year-old elders, my mission president, after his mission, said that he felt like the last 6 months of his mission, he had become more of a therapist than an actual mission president. And so I feel like, you know, when the church stated that the change was to help, you know, families become more involved with missionaries, I really think that it you know, it's also to alleviate, you know, some of those, you know, responsibilities from a mission president perspective who may not be fully equipped to, you know, help each individual missionary deal with, you know, some of their issues that they're having, yeah, depression and anxiety.
Yeah, Lihel, we've talked about this before. It's the same thing as you have any lay leader, you know, when you have a roofing contractor who's trying to give you know, mental health advice, it doesn't quite work.
Yeah, because, I mean, we talk about this with bishops usually, right?
Yeah.
But the reality is, yeah, mission presidents are not therapists, but your family is your family. So I guess if you want one real connection, right, maybe it would be too much work to give everyone a weekly visit with a therapist, but a phone call, you can do that.
This comes from Luke, who writes, when you've had a smartphone in your hand your whole life and still have one as a missionary, calling once a week is the equivalent of calling twice a year for an older generation. I served from 02 to 04. We were given the new option to email on P-Day. It was the new tech, and it was nice, but it definitely added a new level of temptation.
P-Day means preparation day.
Yep.
The thing I think will happen, and I said this jokingly on Twitter, but I think it actually will happen, is missionaries have one day to go shopping and to play soccer and to do all these. I mean, basically, it's their one day to do something fun. And so I imagine parents being really excited. It's their day to talk to their missionary, and the missionary might just say, "Hey, Mom, I'm doing okay. I'm going to go play soccer." Like, you know, I think that some missionaries might want to talk every week. I think a lot of missionaries, they've got stuff to do, and maybe that'll be another positive, you know, benefit, is that they'll see that this is just another thing.
Christy writes, "I'm happy with this change, but wondering if it just opens the door for missionaries contacting their girlfriends and boyfriends when they shouldn't." Patrick Mason, I guess there's some concern that this could get a little out of hand. There will probably be some adjusting along the way, maybe.
Yeah, sure. But the fact is, if somebody wanted to talk to their boyfriend or girlfriend, they were doing it already.
That's right. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm not worried about that slippery slope.
Let me ask you what you all think about Patrick and Lee in particular. Lots of speculation about other changes that might be coming in terms of the missionary experience. It's hard to pin these down. There have been rumors about this for a while. Lee, what can you say about this? Does this represent a step in a larger continuum in some way?
Yeah, I mean, Patrick, maybe you feel the same way. I feel like I'm in a weird place right now because for a long time, you could kind of dismiss rumors, and you did well to dismiss them. And now I've been, a lot of these things that have changed, whether it was the two-hour church or this mission thing, was kind of rumored to me before, and I thought that's not going to happen. And it did happen, so now I just don't know what to think anymore. But I think a lot has been said about, and I don't know how a change would get at this, but the expectation of serving a mission. This idea that, like, you know, technically, you know, Mormons don't believe that you have to go on a mission to be saved, that you can be a good Mormon without going on a mission. I mean, it's definitely true for women because there's not the same expectation. But for men, it's this priesthood duty, but it's not a saving experience. And so it's this question of, like, well, what is it then? And I think that along with missionaries coming home, I mean, let's not pretend that a phone call home once a week is going to change all these things about the anxiety and the frustration. And so I wonder, you know, will the language change? Will the expectation change? Will the types of missions? Will the length of missions? I mean, these are all things that I've heard rumored, and maybe they are on the table. But I think the biggest question is, will Latter-day Saints change the way that they talk about missions in the sense that you go? You just go. And if you're worried, you'll work out your worries in the field. I think a lot of people are living evidence that doesn't work very well. A lot of people are living evidence that a mission could be great, but I think that's something I'm looking for.
Patrick Mason, say something about that finally. And take less than a minute, if you would.
Yeah, sure. So I'd agree with Lee that that I think there are a lot of rumors about types of mission that that could be served, about the length of missions that could be served. Also, I think there might be some changes in the way that the message of missionaries is delivered. It's been pretty static. The exact mechanisms have changed, but the core message hasn't. And people are asking different questions in the 21st century, so the message may adjust to address those questions that people are actually asking.
It's Patrick Mason. He chairs the Mormon Studies Program at Claremont Graduate University. Patrick, thanks for taking the time.
Oh, great to be here, Doug. Thanks.
Amy Heffernan, Seattle-based therapist, member of the Mormon Mental Health Association. Thank you very much for your time as well.
You're welcome.
Jenny Noonan-Dye, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Doug. My pleasure.
Good luck with you and your now weekly conversations with your daughter.
Thanks.
And Lee Hale of KUER. Lee, thanks very much to
thanks.
You. Thanks for those of you who wrote and called in. Radio West is a production of KUER News. We had technical direction from Roddy Nickpour, the show produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.